Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
The Washington Post national NBA writer Ben Golliver is going to join us now, and he's on Twitter at Ben Golliver. He just got home. The NBA season ended. What was that? Sunday night, right? Yeah, Sunday evening is when the Lakers wrapped up another championship. LeBron gets his fourth. And he's back. He's in his casa at home, and he joins us. Ben, thanks for hopping on with us today, man. First, let me just ask, it's got to be kind of a weird feeling now that you're out of that bubble to just move around freely and not have to test yourself every second of every day. What's it been like so far?
No, it's super weird. I mean, like you said, it's officially over. I took my suit that was soaked in champagne to the dry cleaner, so we're done with the bubble officially today. No, it was really weird yesterday, guys. I mean, I'm not sure if Florida knows there's a pandemic or not, but walking through that airport was just really, really dicey. And granted, I'm coming from a situation where, you know, we're locked down super tight. There's crazy regulations. You know, our lives are being monitored practically minute by minute, right? And to go through an airport where, you know, some people have the masks on, some people don't, you know, TSA has got this huge line backed up. Everybody's kind of in close proximity. It was pretty spooky, I'm not going to lie. And, you know, it does feel good to be back here in LA where I think people take this thing very seriously. And so that's good. But, you know, it's strange. I mean, even driving a car today, guys, I had to teach myself how to drive my car. It's first time in 3 months I've been behind the wheel.
That is amazing. That's a long time to go without driving. That could be a little weird. But what was the vibe like? I loved watching your Instagram stories and just kind of following along with the celebration and LeBron spraying you with the champagne. But we were all kind of watching and wondering, obviously you can't match winning a championship in the mood in an arena, whether it's at home or on the road. But you've been to NBA Finals games over the years. Like, just how did that stack up? What was it like? Lakers win. What was the emotions like there?
It was so strange because this finals was one of the least memorable finals, most forgettable finals that I've covered out of the last 10. But I actually think it was the best celebration I've ever covered. I know that sounds weird because there's no fans there. You know, you're not even doing it in front of the home crowd. You don't get the satisfaction of, you know, punking the road crowd either, right? So both of those can kind of add their elements. But it was just the relief factor that everybody gets to go home. I'm sure you saw the video of Danny Green running into the locker room and just shouting, you know, we're bleeping free, you know, and he's just so excited that they know basically they're all going to be home the next day. It was this giant feeling of relief, I think satisfaction for the Lakers, and they were loving it. And the other cool part, too, is the arena area is not that big. So from the reporter standpoint, we're like right on top of these guys, right? And we're able to kind of get in on the champagne. Obviously, LeBron is smoking the cigar, and we're kind of following him around as he's calling his mom for that you know, very kind of emotional, heartfelt phone call. And they were just all so, so happy. So for me, I'll remember that celebration probably better than any other one that I've ever covered. And there was a lot of guys who were first-time champions, and that makes a big difference too, right? Because they're experiencing a guy like Dwight Howard, you know, and that's maybe a tough storyline for people to wrap their minds around. He's not necessarily the most popular player, but you know, his career comes full circle there. Frank Vogel, he gets to win his first title. Obviously, Anthony Davis wins his first title. He got very emotional. So you add it all up. Even though it was a weird environment, it was very, very memorable.
Yeah, Ben Golliver is our guest here. Washington Post covers the NBA, does an exceptional job as well. Two podcasts as well, the Greatest of All Talk podcast and the Open Floor pod. Give him a follow on Twitter at Ben Golliver. You know, look, naturally, LeBron wins. It then stirs up the debate again between him and MJ or where he ranks all time for people. And I said this yesterday. Most people are never going to change their mind. No matter what happens, there's people that will always just be LeBron. There's people that always just be Jordan. I think one advantage he has been, and I want to get your thoughts on just the legacy part of winning a fourth title. I think one thing he'll kind of have over MJ, though, is not only the longevity of winning, but you just listed the cast of characters who, when this team signed those guys, many people said, what? Rondo? Dwight? KCP? Those aren't guys you can win with. J.R. Smith was believed to be that before he got to Cleveland. He's won with guys that many didn't think you could actually win anything with. I think that's an advantage he's going to have. What did the four title do for you, and what are your thoughts on just that never-ending conversation between him and MJ?
Well, I think the key difference between Michael and LeBron on the stuff that you're talking about with the roster building and making some of these role player teammates kind of stand out and be better, Michael is a franchise player. The Chicago Bulls built around him for more than a decade. LeBron is a franchise, right? I mean, wherever you drop him, he's moving from spot to spot. He's orchestrating trades. He's trying to build super teams. You know, Rich Paul is right there to help him. I mean, you guys probably heard him say a couple weeks ago, his quote specifically, that's why I got Anthony Davis in Los Angeles. You know, LeBron was the one who said that. And so, I mean, that's not something that you typically hear from a player of any previous generation. So LeBron's been responsible for that. Now, when I look at, you know, where do I stand on the GOAT debate, if there was ever a moment for me to be pulled over to LeBron's side, it would be when he's spraying me with champagne after he wins the title and he in the wild, right? I get to go home back to my home in Los Angeles as well. And I'll tell you, after 24 hours of reflection, I'm still on Team Mike, man. I'm not sure I'm ever going to change from that. Mm-hmm. I think if you look at just the size and scope of the fans that he had compared to, you know, what LeBron's dealing with now, I mean, just orders of magnitude more people were watching Michael do it than LeBron. And so I think from the popularity standpoint, from the emotional connection, inspiring an entire generation, including LeBron, the 6-0 finals, all the stats that you guys probably have memorized, I'm still on Team Mike. But it was a phenomenal performance from LeBron, and I don't want anyone to undercut or try to put an asterisk on this title. The bubble was tough. It was not fun. It was grueling. It was a long run. And he outlasted guys who were 10 and 15 years younger than him, including, you know, guys like Damian Lillard in their prime, James Harden in their prime, Jamal Murray in an absolute incredible month of basketball, Nikola Jokic, Jimmy Butler playing the best basketball he's ever played. This was not the 73-win Warriors. You know, he didn't beat a team like that. But he beat an awful lot of good players, and he was the best player in the bubble to me.
Yeah, I don't want to turn the page too quickly, Ben, because he just got home and it was a crazy journey. But I'm already, as a Blazer fan, thinking towards next season, and I can't wait to watch, like, counting down the days for the start. Just on that, like, how do you think that's going to shape out? Like, when do you think they're going to try and begin the season? How many games should they try and play next year? Like, what do you think next year looks like?
Well, their stated goal is to play as many games as possible in as many arenas as possible in front of as many fans as possible. Now, the only problem is all of those things are variables, right? They don't have a day that they would necessarily want to start. They've said it won't be before January at the very earliest. Talking to some teams, including the Trailblazers president, Chris McGowan, recently, he said they're going to be ready to welcome fans back with all new procedures whenever possible, but they're going to have to get sign-off from the local government, right, and they're going to have to get an NBA-wide plan as well in terms of how they want to go forward and do this thing with the pandemic still going on. So, you know, it's very possible they open next season and they're not in a position to have, like, large-scale fans. It might have to be, you know, a restricted thing. I mean, they just don't know that yet. The thing is, the first step, they have to negotiate with the players to set the financial terms for next season, just like they negotiated the terms of the bubble. So that's going to be an extended process. It's going to take a while. They're still missing billions in revenue from all the fans they weren't able to have in the arenas last year and some of the lost television revenue. So that has to be made up for in some way. They're all optimistic those talks are going to go well. But I do think it could take a little bit here. So I think the next thing that people to look for is the draft in November. Free agency should be around late November, early December, and then the season will be following, you know, at some point after that. But if it gets pushed into February or late January for the start of next season, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And if you just kind of speed that forward, that means they're probably playing the finals again. Maybe in August next year, maybe September.
Yeah. Ben Golliver's our guest here, Washington Post. He just got back from the bubble. Now, let me ask you about the Western Conference, because LeBron and the Lakers aren't going anywhere, right? The Clippers are coming back, presumably. Maybe they built some camaraderie through the adversity that they went through. The Nuggets, look what they were able to accomplish. Obviously, Portland is in this mix. Golden State is coming back healthy. The West is loaded. I don't need to list every team. You know that better than anybody. Do you think if Neil Olshey was to give you a call, and we largely out here just think he's going to stand pat, keep everybody as is, and hope that things break his way. But if he was to call Ben Golliver and say, Ben, Should I take a risk and make a big move and hope that it's the right move to get Dame in the position to compete for a championship? Or should I just stand pat and bring everybody back? What would you say to him?
Well, first of all, as a Western Conference elitist, it sure is nice to have the Larry O'Brien trophy back where it belongs, right? I mean, I think 14-7 since 2000, it's just really nice that, you know, this conference can represent. It's the superior conference for a long time. It's very nice to have that. Even I know in Portland, they're not happy the Lakers have it, but come on, guys, we'd rather have it than the Eastern Conference. Now, in terms of what the Blazers should do and the way things shake out in the West for next year, I would say this. One of the blessings of the bubble is that you can, even though I don't want to put an asterisk on what the Lakers did, we don't know how much any of it will translate back to a normal playoff format, right? Like, if you put the Clippers at home for game 5 against the Nuggets in Staples Center, they don't lose that game, and they definitely don't blow a 3-1 lead if two of those games are at home, right? So I think they're better than they looked in the bubble. I think you can make an argument that the Lakers, if they had to go on the road and play some of these teams that they played, maybe they wouldn't have looked as good. Would they have gone through Portland as quickly as they did if they had to play some of those games in the Moda Center? I'm not convinced about that, right? So I think there's a lot of variables that, you know, you're trying to handicap what the landscape looks like, and there's just a lot of unknowns based on what translates from the bubble and what doesn't. Is Jamal Murray still going to be like a guy who looked like a top 15 player in the league when he was in the bubble? I'm not convinced of that necessarily either. So I think if you're Portland, you want to weigh all of those factors. You obviously want to be deliberate with what you're doing and realizing that this was a unique experience. You had a lot of positives from your bubble run and making the playoffs that you can build on. But you also don't want to necessarily overreact to what happened in Orlando. Now, at the same time, I don't think they're going to be in position to answer your question to make some sort of a big move. I think financially, when you've got those giant contracts they've already got, you're pretty much backed into a corner. I think you're probably going to pitch it as, hey, Nurkic is back healthy. You're going to try to bring back Carmelo. Those are going to be sort of your big, off-season moves, if you want to look at it that way. And then you also hope Zach Collins is healthy. And again, you're going to have the front court that you expected to have last year before all the injuries hit. I mean, to me, I think that's probably the way that they're going to play it. Of course, if someone wants my advice, I'm always going to say, yeah, swing for the fences, try to go out and find that talent. But I'm not sure that talent is really available to them right now. And I think it's going to be kind of a quiet offseason from a player movement standpoint. There's not that many big stars available in free agency. And I think a lot of teams are just going to be cost conscious. They don't want to spend the money right now if they don't have their arenas fully open, able to, you know, bring as many fans into the building.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask about just the spending of this offseason. It's kind of unique. And I know they can set the CBA number, was it like force majeure or whatever it's called in the CBA, that allows them, even when revenues are down, to set the CBA level or the salary cap level, excuse me. But do you expect there to be guys who are better than average players that end up going on cheaper deals because teams are just pinching pennies and not wanting to spend?
I think so. I also think you're going to see a lot of short-term contracts. You're going to see a lot of agents advise, like, look, this year is going to be kind of rocky, but once business gets back to normal, it's going to be sort of like that summer of 2016 where there was that crazy spending spree. And so any free agent that was lined up with the summer of 2016 got those crazy huge deals, like the Evan Turner-type deals. Mm-hmm. I think if you're an agent, you're saying, hey, try to get yourself on that cycle. Maybe you want to be on the summer of 2021. Maybe you want to be on the summer of 2022. Where the NBA's financial picture is back after the pandemic, buildings are all completely open, and owners, you know, have money burning a hole in their pocket. I mean, I think that would be my advice if I was an agent. I just don't think that there's going to be that much salary cap room available this summer. And also, there's just not that many great players to spend it on. And I do think that we've seen, you know, some teams learn the lesson, and Portland included. You don't want to spend star money for a guy who's not actually a star. You get yourself back into a corner when you do that. You know, I'm referring to like the Mo Harkless situation or the Evan Turner situation, all these other contracts that were just sort of lingering for them, for a while, the Allen Crabbe situation. You don't want to do that again. So I do think there's been some lessons learned by all executives around the league since 2016. I think that's going to apply here as we go forward the next couple of years.
Was your mental health okay during all of it, man? It's got to be kind of a weird thing to be in a hotel room and just travel back and forth to an arena and never see people that, you know, personal people, family, friends, et cetera, and be gone that long. Were you doing all right?
Oh, it was exhausting. And I would say that, I mean, more than anything, it was just tiring because we're up until 3 a.m. every single night. The fact that we didn't have to fly, though, was actually great. That was like the biggest benefit because the playoffs are always exhausting, and not changing time zones, not going through the hassle of the airport for 3 months was awesome. I think I'm going to look back on the bubble as the most challenging and most rewarding assignment that I'm ever going to have in my life. Like, I don't know really how you would top it if you really think about it. I mean, getting to be in close proximity with the best players in the world for three straight months and, you know, living pretty well at Disney World. I mean, it wasn't fancy accommodations for sure, but it was comfortable. And, you know, obviously I leave with a lot of pride in the work that I did too, but yeah, I mean, it was a grind. Look, and don't let anybody tell you different. If they're trying to write this thing off or, oh, you know, of course the Lakers won. I mean, there was no guarantees here. They had to go day by day, hour by hour, sort of like the rest of us. And I'm just glad I got the opportunity to do it. And I'm really looking forward, actually, to the next 3 or 4 months, just putting my head down and writing a book all about it so that people sort of know what this was like 20 or 30 years from now, because it was just so unique, so random, so one of a kind, kind of whimsical at times, but also like super grueling, like I mentioned. So, you know, it was a big gumbo of emotions. And, you know, I'll never forget. I'll tell you that.
Well, you did awesome. A great job, man. I kudos to you and all the media as well, because I know the players get a lot of credit, as they should, but you guys deserve a lot of credit too. A lot of sacrifice from a lot of people, from family and friends, to live somewhere, to cover a sport and give us all that content, like watching LeBron spray you in the face with champagne. Had to have been a cool experience, once in a lifetime. And you've got that book. You want to plug it real quick?
Yeah, Bubble Ball. You can go on Amazon and pre-order it. Barnes & Noble, it'll be in Pals, I'm sure, if it's not already. And I got to write it, though, first. That's the thing. It's like I'm already out here hawking this thing to you guys, but I haven't even written a page yet. So I better get started on it, huh?
Absolutely. There we go. Great stuff. Washington Post National NBA reporter Ben Golliver on Twitter, at Ben Golliver. Welcome back home, my man. Great job covering the NBA. And we'll catch up soon in Pub Bubble Ball when you get it done.
I can't wait, guys. All right. Take care and hope everybody's safe and sound.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.